Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Ghost Hunting in New England.
Your favorite spooky podcast. Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts Amelia.
And Beth.
And happy Halloween. We're finally here.
Boo. Scary.
This is great. We finally made it. We're all excited. We're all happy. I envision you all listening on your commutes to work on Thursday, spookiest day of the year, and we are so, so, so psyched to have you guys with us today.
Yes, we are. And as a, of course, Halloween bonus, we are bringing you the history of Halloween.
Ooh.
Along with all sorts of listener fan mail, drive-by ghostings. And so we're really happy to be with you guys today and hope that you're enjoying your morning as much as we're enjoying recording on a Friday evening.
All right. So, Beth, you want to kick it off with some spooky history?
Sure. So it was interesting. You know, I thought that I knew a lot about the history of Halloween, mm-hmm. and then I really started digging into it. And it turns out I thought that I knew stuff, and I knew a little bit of stuff, but I didn't know nearly as much stuff as I probably should have. So, yeah, we'll see how much other people knew. So the history of Halloween actually starts with the Celts. And so I was talking to somebody earlier today, and they actually thought that it was German. And that's Christmas trees. Actually, we get the Christmas tree tradition from the Germanic people. But the Celts, C-E-L-T-S, it's spelt the same as our Celtics that we have here in Boston, but we say Celtics wrong because so it should be Celts. From northern France, the United Kingdom, and Ireland is where they were primarily found. And they celebrated a holiday that they called Samhain. I'm just kind of guessing that that's how it's pronounced because it's spelt Samhain, S-A-M-H-A-I-N, but this might have explained my problem with pronouncing anything while I was in Ireland. So Samhain is the festival where the ancient Celts celebrated it between, it was at the midpoint between the autumnal equinox and the winter solstice, and it's where they believed that the new year started. So it was a three-day festival that would happen, three full days, three full nights. And during that time, everyone was expected to present themselves to the king or the chieftains, whatever they had in that particular area. And if you didn't, it was punishable by the gods. The whole point of the Samhain celebration was to welcome the harvest, to go out and collect in the whole harvest that had been growing all year, and to bring in the dark half of the year, because Ireland, the UK, and northern France are pretty northern in the hemisphere, and so the dark half of the year does tend to get dark around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and the sun doesn't come up until 8 o'clock in the morning. So it's pretty dark in the wintertime there. They had four quarterly fire festivals in the ancient Celtic tradition. This one was considered to be the most important because it marked the new year in their culture. So it was basically drunken feasts for 3 days. They would let their fires in their houses burn out while they were out collecting the harvest, welcoming the harvest, having these big parties. And at the end of the harvest, the druid priests, they took a wheel. And I would have loved to see an artist rendition of what this wheel looked like. But it had like pieces of rock on it that created sparks. And as they spun it, it was supposed to symbolize the sun, and they used it to start a new fire. Then they sacrificed a bunch of cattle, and the people took home a piece of the flame that had been created in this new fire to burn in their houses all year long. So it was a symbol of the new year. It was also considered to be a crime-free time of year, and any time that you committed a crime or if you used a weapon of any sort, It was punishable by death if you did it during these 3 days of the year. So that's where the ancient festival came from. There were some monsters that were associated with it. When they had this festival, they really believed that the boundaries between our world and other worlds were thinned out. And so monsters and spirits could pass easily back and forth between the two worlds. And so people would leave offerings in the fields for these spirits that would come and approach and make sure that they were fed and that they stayed out in the field. The people would dress as animals or monsters so they weren't kidnapped by any of the monsters or the fairies who were coming across the thin boundary at the moment. They wanted to fool them into thinking that the people were also the monsters and the fairies. So that's where the original dressing up tradition came from. There were three monsters that I found out about that were very closely associated with the Samhain festival. One was Pooka, who is a shapeshifter. One is Lady Gwyn, who is a headless woman who walked around with a black pig. And the last one was Dullahan, who was either an imp or a headless man on a horse carrying his head under his arm. And he had a flame-eyed horse. And if you saw him, it was an omen of death. And so naturally, all I could think of when I read about this was Ichabod Crane, and that Washington Irving must have known about this particular monster, and that could only be where he got his inspiration for the Headless Horseman story, which is probably one of my absolute favorite stories in the world. So as we go along through time, we're looking at like 2,000 years ago. So we come a little bit further forward in time and we enter Christianity and the Roman Empire. So the Roman Empire did expand all over Northern Europe, and they at some point had control of these Celtic lands. And so the Pope naturally got involved, and the Pope wanted to bring all of the pagans into the Christian religion. And so they're not going to allow the pagans to still celebrate their holidays as they've always celebrated them. They want them to be celebrating them in light of the Christian tradition. So Pope Boniface, on May 13th, 1609 AD, decided that he was going to move the celebration to May. And it's now going to be a celebration of saints and martyrs. So there was this big celebration in May, but then, would you believe it? The people still had their fire celebrations in October and November that they had always had. So then a couple hundred years later, we get Pope Gregory III, and he moves the holiday back to November 1st, but calls it All Saints Day. And on November 2nd, he says it's going to be All Souls Day. Those Celtic pagans did keep their fires, and they started calling October 31st All Hallows Eve, which when you run it all together and over time just becomes the name Halloween. So that's where we got the name from. And as time goes on in the Middle Ages, now instead of having the big, huge kingdom of fires, the bonfires tended to be more local, and they were thought to protect the locals from fairies and witches. So each village would have its own bonfire. There wasn't as much traveling anymore to go and see the priests. I thought this was so interesting. I feel like at one point I knew this, but I had forgotten that jack-o'-lanterns were originally carved from turnips, potatoes, beets, little root vegetables, and it wasn't until many years later that they switched over to using pumpkins. When people would go to these festivals and the druid priests would be there, one of the biggest things that they tried to do in the festival was fortune telling. And so I'll talk about some of the different kind of lost traditions of fortune telling later. But they believed that because the barrier between the two worlds had been thinned out, that it was easier to tell fortunes. And with a whole countries, a whole culture of people who relied on the harvest and relied on nature, it was really important that they get good predictions of their future at this particular time of year. They had a couple other interesting traditions where they believed that the barrier was lowered, they would invite their ancestors into the house to have a meal with them. The ancestors would be invited in. They'd have a place set at the table. The children were encouraged to play games and dance and entertain the ghosts. The adults at the table would tell their dead people their news of the past year. So it was like the Christmas newsletter, the family newsletter that goes out now, except it was as they just sat there and said it to what they hoped were the spirits of their ancestors. So they called it the Dumb Supper. And I don't know if it was dumb just because the ancestors couldn't speak or what the story was there, but I thought that was an interesting name for that particular tradition. Back to the Romans again, just for another second. One of the festivals that the Romans had was the Festival of the Dead, which is called the Feralia, and they tried to really incorporate the Festival of Feralia in with Halloween, and it just never took in the Celtic areas. They also did have a festival, it was the Festival of Pomona. I really wasn't exactly sure what the Festival of Pomona was, but it had something to do with apples. And it's thought now that the inclusion of the apples at that point in the festival is where we get the idea now of bobbing for apples when we go to Halloween parties. So I thought that was a really interesting tidbit.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that one.
So it was during the Middle Ages, really, that the origins of trick-or-treat came along, and that was primarily in northern UK, so in Scotland and northern England. People would do this thing called mumming, and mumming was done during the nights leading up to Samhain, and so people would put on a costume, and they would go door to door where different families were having their dumb suppers, and they would show up and children were there, they were in costume, and they would dance and perform for the ancestors of the family of the house that they were at, and the adults would tell the ancestors their news of the year as well. And at the end of the little performance, cakes were given as payment. So they were mumming cakes that they would hand out to children. So that's where we got the idea of a treat. As for the tricks, it was common for pranks to be played among people on Halloween. It was always just blamed on the fairies. They were usually harmless pranks that would happen, and none of the vandalism and the more harmful pranks that we see currently with some Halloween celebrations. Then Halloween comes to America. I always thought that Halloween was a big thing in America, but it was not.
That's very simple.
So in colonial times, it actually did come over. And it was celebrated in the Mid-Atlantic and Southern colonies, but in the Northern Puritan New England area, it was not a thing. In the mid-19th century, there were a huge number of Irish immigrants fleeing the potato famine, and they came in all over the United States. And it wasn't until then that it was really popularized in America as a whole. Americans would go door to door and get candy or money. It was in the late 1800s that there was a big push to make Halloween more family friendly and like a community event. And so parties were planned around food and games and costumes. Newspapers and community leaders wanted to take like the scary and the ugly out of Halloween. And so they asked parents to tone down costumes. And it was in the late 1800s, into the early 1900s, I guess, before the 19-teens, that the ideas behind Halloween really lost all of their religious ties. By 1950, the baby boomers were coming, and Halloween morphed into being just for kids. And families were growing, there were neighborhoods, there were suburbs, and so the Halloween celebrations started moving out of the big neighborhood community center places and into private homes and into just the neighborhood streets where people could go out and trick-or-treat and just be in their community. So since the 1950s, Halloween has kind of had a bit of a falling off in popularity, especially in the most recent times, where people are not going out and trick-or-treating in their community anymore. They really are involved in much more organized trick-or-treat activities, like going to the mall or being bussed by entire busloads of kids into certain neighborhoods that are deemed safe. I didn't want to get into any of the like stuff about tainted candy or anything like that.
I got about 800 kids swinging by the store tomorrow. That's what they do over in Wellesley.
There you go.
Saturday before Halloween. Big parade.
Yep. And it's just, it's become a thing. So people are not comfortable just sending their children out door to door in America anymore. You know, there's just too many fears behind what could happen to your kids. So they walk around with them and take them places where it's well lit and everything is very sanitized. Some of the other traditions that have been associated with Halloween over the years, I think that you're going to notice a definite theme with these traditions. Young women thought that they could see their future husbands in little yarn dolls and yarn patterns that they would make, apple scraps that would be thrown away, or in the mirror. They would stand in front of the mirror and hold a candle, and it would be in a dark room, and they would try to see their future husband's face over their shoulder.
I've had people make me do the apple scraps before.
Yeah?
Yeah, you're supposed to throw apple scraps, and you get, like, initials.
Oh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
All right. I don't know this for sure. The people who have had me do that have been of Latino origin, so I don't know if that comes, if that's something from down there, or they're just doing it up here, or what.
According to my research, that was an Irish tradition as well, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
All right, so a couple of other traditions. In Ireland, there were people who would hide a ring in mashed potatoes and serve it on Halloween, and whoever found the ring would be the next one to be married before the next Halloween.
Hmm.
Hopefully you didn't break your tooth. In Scotland, they would have women take a handful of hazelnuts, and they would name each of the hazelnuts after one of their suitors, and then throw the nuts one at a time in a fire.
Nice.
So usually hazelnuts will explode when you throw them in the fire.
Yeah.
So the one that doesn't explode, like the one that just burns down to ashes, that's your guy. Because it didn't, like, pop and blow up, I guess. But then there was another set of information that said it was actually the opposite of that. And the one that burned to nothing, was going to fizzle out because it was a love that was never going to happen.
So I hadn't heard of this tradition, but as someone who does, like, weird stuff, that second one sounded more like something that would be a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there were other traditions where if you ate a walnut, hazelnut, nutmeg sort of sweet, you would dream about your future husband. You can look at egg yolks in a bowl of water to see your future husband's face.
That, I know a lot of people who do that year-round. I haven't heard that being associated with Halloween, but I do know people who practice that method.
Hmm. Is everybody getting a very yellow husband?
It's like Simpsons.
And the last one, we're back to apples and bobbing for apples here. If you were in a group of people and you were all bobbing for apples, the first one to catch an apple in the bobbing would be the next one to get married. I didn't find any traditions on things men would do in order to find their bride.
Yeah, they don't care.
They're just kind of waiting for the right time to come up. But so that is my history of Halloween.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. I hadn't heard that about bobbing for apples. I like vaguely remember as a child, because I know we would do that. I always remember doing it in like summertime though. But it would be like whoever was the first one to get the apple like had good luck. I remember there was like some, I barely remember, but there was like some kind of weird superstition around the first person to get the apple.
Hmm. No, I don't remember anything like that. I just remember it being like a game at the Halloween party that they'd have at the church up in Wollaston.
And I remember there being something in our neighborhood. I remember what, I think it was like good luck, something like that.
Okay, well, it would line up with, they were all looking to get married and that would have been the best luck that they could have.
Yeah. So I know in Salem, you can still, they still have Samhain celebrations up there.
Yeah?
Yeah, in the pagan tradition, a lot of people, I guess, Wiccan or whatever form of paganism you're doing, a lot of people still celebrate it.
I did see a whole section about Wiccans and Samhain on various sites that I was looking at. I just wasn't bringing that sort of forward as our history of Halloween, which is kind of where Halloween was and how it got here in the mainstream. But I'm sure that there are a lot of other very interesting celebrations that people are doing in honor of a variety of Halloween traditions.
A lot of the traditions are still alive with it, which is interesting and cool. Yeah, because I know a lot of people who still celebrate it, or a lot of people still put it with the harvest.
Mm-hmm.
So like having all their crops blessed, things like that. I know a friend of the show, Tenny Kumar, always reminds me that Halloween is very real.
Mm-hmm.
Halloween is very real. She always tells me the veil is thin. So hopefully if you guys are listening to this on Wednesday or Thursday, veil's thin. So go on out there.
Right.
And it's interesting too, because that thing you said about the place being set for someone, a mm-hmm. past family member, a lot of people still practice that on All Saints Day, which
yeah.
I think is very, yeah, very interesting, because the people I know who celebrate that way are Catholic.
It is a Catholic holiday.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it does make sense.
And well, it's a Catholic holiday, but I'm saying that, again, it's taking that pagan, if you will,
tradition.
From it. Yep. Yeah. Which a lot of that goes on. And a lot of that goes on with Christmas. I don't know why I couldn't remember the word Christmas, but Christmas.
That's cool. I have times I forget words.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting to look at how some of these things have evolved through history and how different ideas have blended with other ideas. And suddenly we come out with this whole thing where kids are running around dressed as Freddy Krueger and demanding candy and toilet papering your house if they don't get it. And
yeah, but also, like, it hasn't changed that much when you think about how long it's been. I mean, over 2,000 years, people are still dressing up.
Mm-hmm.
Over 1,000 years, people are still asking for treats.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And it did have a little dying off, but then it was, you know, that resurgence in the 1950s with the baby boomers that really made it take off in American culture again.
Yeah, for sure.
I'd be curious, all of our listeners in other countries, kind of like all over the world, is Halloween a thing everywhere?
I know nowhere does it like America.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, that I know. I know here it's like, it's much, much bigger here than it is in other places.
Okay.
But I have a good friend from Ireland, and she told me they do celebrate, but it's nothing like it is here.
Okay. Yeah. When I was in Ireland, one of the people was talking about, they had been asked by somebody, you know, like, oh, where's a really good place to celebrate St. Patrick's Day? You know, somebody wanted to go and celebrate, and the answer was, well, Boston.
Yeah.
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 So, yeah. Celebrate big or go home. That's what we say here in the States.
Well, you know, it's something kind of interesting that I always think about. And I love this idea. And I was talking to someone probably about 2 months ago, and they were from England. And he and I had a conversation about it. And it was, you know, in Ireland, there's only 4 million people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's 13 million people in Boston, and mm-hmm. the majority of us are Irish.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and that's just in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
So then you look at all of New England, all of the United States. I mean, there are more Irish descendants here
mm-hmm.
than there are in Ireland. And same thing with England. I mean, there's more British people here, or British ancestry. You know, I'm one of them, than there are in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's interesting. Yes, in certain respects, it makes sense that some of us have carried that tradition on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Except for St. Patrick's Day. That's just good.
Some of you do, it's true. Yeah. Although I hear in Chicago, they have a pretty big St. Patrick's Day celebration as well.
Yeah.
So I think they dye a whole river green.
I don't know. No one does like Boston, though.
I don't know that I've ever actually gone out on St. Patrick's Day. Since I don't drink,
You haven't drank for 5 years.
Yeah, but even before.
You were 33. I've never been to the St. Patrick's Day parade. I have zero interest in that.
But also, I want to point out that your math is a little weird because I'm 25.
Yeah, that's fair. So you were 20. I mean, by the time I was 20, I was going out for St. Patrick's Day.
No, I didn't do anything like that. That would have been completely illegal.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been to the parade, but I always go out.
Okay.
I have something to do.
I don't know.
And all my friends yell at me because I don't drink beer.
Like, somebody told me one time it's amateur night. I'm like, I don't need to be involved in that.
Yeah.
I'd rather just stay home and eat a corned beef.
Yeah, some fun today.
Big corned beef and cabbage dinner. And
yeah, my dad still does that every year.
Only once a year?
Well, no, on St. Patrick's Day, he does the big like corned beef cabbage dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the best dinner out there.
That's fun. Yeah.
What does he eat on Halloween, though?
Candy.
That's not very healthy.
You know, the guy runs like 8 marathons a year. He's allowed to have one night of candy. Okay, so that was an awesome history. Very informative. Learned a lot. Do you like us to transition to our, how many pages we have? 12 pages of drive-by ghostings?
Sure.
All right. Okay, so thank you so much, everyone, for all your mail this week. It was overwhelming and humbling and awesome. So thank you so much to everybody. First one says, "Hi, Amelia and Beth. My name is Nathan, and I'd like to share my story about the day I died. I was 7 years old, and I moved to Wales with my grandparents, and I wasn't there a month when I was playing on my bike in the street when a van being chased by the police hit me.
Yikes.
I remember it well, and every detail. I was standing over my lifeless body, and as I looked around, I saw relatives who had passed away walk to me. 'It's not your time. You have to go back,' my aunt says. And then a guy who lived across the street ran over and brought my body back to life. In the hospital, the doctor was shocked I didn't have a scratch on me. A few weeks passed, and I started seeing flashes like sparklers. Then I started to see the shadow figures. I spoke to my grandmother, who had similar experiences as a child. She said some people who have had near-death experiences have a closer connection to the spirit world, and if the shadow figures noticed me noticing them, I should never show them I'm scared, because they feed off it. Now I'm 38, and I'm a paranormal investigator who helps families with hauntings. I sometimes see full-body apparitions, and every time I use my spirit box, my grandmother comes through. We have a specific word, just so I know. Thank you, and I hope you like my story. Nathan."
That's we did great, like your Nathan. Story. Thank you.
We did like your story. That was awesome. And it brought together two different episodes we just recently did. Near-death experiences and shadow people.
Yeah, don't let those shadow people see that you're scared.
Nope, they'll feed right off of it. But that is interesting because, according to his grandmother, if you have had the near-death experience, you're closer to them. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I want to know where Nathan's a paranormal investigator. Nathan, let us know.
Yeah.
Probably in Wales, but who knows?
Maybe he knows Great British Ghost Tour guy.
Yeah, Dylan. Did we ever say thank you to Dylan on here?
I don't think that we've talked about the fact that we were on Dylan's thing.
Yeah, thank you so much to Dylan of the Great British Ghost Tour who filmed us for his upcoming documentary. That was really awesome and a lot of fun.
We were at the very spooky Omni Parker House in Boston. Nothing spooky happened while we were there, but it's still a spooky place. So this is a story from Katie. "Hi there, I wanted to send my ghost story. My name is Katie and I live in New Hampshire. Prior to moving to New England, my family and I lived in Florida. I grew up in my grandpa's house in Florida. Being that my mom was a single parent, my grandpa, who lived with us, would play a huge role in raising me. He loved to travel, golf, and smoke cigars. When he passed, we would notice that every Christmas Eve, the master bedroom, which was my papa's room following his passing, my mom couldn't come to sleep in there, too many memories, the room would fill with cigar smoke and the smell of his cologne and cigar smoke. No one smoked in the house. It made no sense other than it was Papa sharing with my mom and I that he was happy and present with us. We had great closure knowing he was truly at peace. Since moving up to New Hampshire, it's made me miss him more and that much harder to have left the house. At times, I feel like we just left him. Well, it's not an extravagant ghost story. It's my family's ghost story, and we'll carry it with us forever. Thanks for reading."
That is beautiful.
It is.
And touching.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Katie.
It's always nice to hear those ghost stories of people's people who come back just to let them know that they're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like those a lot.
That's sweet.
It's really nice. "Hey, Amelia and Beth. I have a couple of encounters that I would love to share with you too. I only recently discovered your podcast, but I am totally hooked. Thanks for all your hard and entertaining work." Well, my goodness, you are so welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could have cut that out, but we're always looking for the little ego booster. Right?
Yeah.
Thanks.
A little hit of dopamine. "The first was a ghostly sighting at my work. It was 2005, and I was working at a retail company as their shipping and operations coordinator. There was always a joke in the store that there was a ghost who moved things, and one of my co-managers said that a vase had come off the shelf and smashed just as they were about to close the store. No one had been in the area for about 10 minutes when it happened."
I guess nobody told that ghost that there's no overtime allowed this week.
"As for my own experiences, I had often been in the upstairs stockroom in secluded corners, and I would get what I can only describe as a sudden kind of electric pulse that would come from the base of my skull and shoot upwards to the top of my head. I always thought it was weird, but never had anything else that accompanied it, so I wrote it off. Then I had an experience that I really can't explain. The offices were upstairs from the shipping and receiving department. I was doing something with inventory on the computer station, and my co-manager was writing the schedule on the station next to me, specifically to my left and closer to the door than I was. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw who I assumed was my receiving associate walk through the door, pass behind my co-manager, and then stop and stand right behind my right shoulder, just inside my peripheral vision. I turned to say something to him and said, "Yo man, what's up?" But no one was there. I turned to my co-manager and just gave him an incredulous look. Without me saying anything to him, he looked at me, put his hands up and said, "Dude, I saw it too." The pulse in my head happened again.
Wow. All right, so is that the end of that one? Okay. So I also get like those pulsing sensations in my head. I thought it was like a pinched nerve. I'm gonna have to think about that a little bit more.
As a Reiki master, I can tell you what I think it is.
Oh, what is it?
And it would make a lot of sense. It's your third eye and your throat chakra are trying to connect, but there's a block between them. Your third eye would be the best way to see a ghost.
Oh, so it goes like right up this part of my head right here.
Yeah.
And it
would start like at the base of your hairline.
Yeah.
And would go right up to where your head like hits out the most in the back.
Okay, yeah. Because it stops right here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like incapacitating.
Damn.
Like there have been times that I like fall to the ground because it hurts so much.
You're blocked up. Okay, we'll see a Reiki practitioner. I suggest the ones that open doors.
They're close to me.
They sure are. The second is more involved and took place on my family vacation to the Bruce Peninsula in Canada. In 2015, my brother-in-law was getting married and he is from Ontario. My wife and her siblings, two brothers and a sister, all grew up on the Bruce Peninsula, which is just out into Lake Superior. We had rented a house on Sable Beach, which is a small resort community on the lake side of the peninsula. My family had gone ahead of me and were there for a week before I got there. On their third day, I got a call from my wife saying that I should bring my ghost gear with me because my brother-in-law's girlfriend had been hearing steps in the hallway at night, and when she would check it out, everyone else was still asleep. On top of that, she also thought she had heard voices. My oldest son, who at the time was 8, was also having a really hard time sleeping in the downstairs family room with the other kids. He had told my wife that he had seen a shadow moving against the wall. I thought this could just be lights and trees coming through the window. When I left for Canada, I nonetheless still packed my K2 and my voice recorder. God bless you. When I got there, the house was booming with people. In the house was my wife, my two boys who were 8 and 4, my sister-in-law and her two boys who were 3 and 5, my brother-in-law and his girlfriend and their daughter who was 2 at the time, and the groom-to-be and my wife's mother. The house was very large, 6 bedrooms split level, with all rooms on both floors occupied. Nothing happened that weekend except a beautiful wedding and a fun time with some family, but then everyone left except for myself, my wife, and my kids. We moved all of our stuff into the 2 bedrooms upstairs. About 2 nights in, my wife and I had put the kids to bed and we were in the entertainment room having some wine and just relaxing and talking with each other when we both heard footsteps coming down the hall. I got up to get the child, who I was sure was there, but to my surprise, no one was there. I went down the hall to check on the kids, and they were both out like lights. So I went back. About an hour went by, and we heard it again. This time my wife got up to check on the kids, and I went to our new room and grabbed my gear. I started with the K2 in the hallway, and except for a spike or two, there wasn't anything going on with it. I started to do an EVP session in the entertainment room, and my wife stopped me. She said, "How about we just leave it be?" So I turned off the recorder, but just kept the K2 on the coffee table. Nothing happened the rest of the night. Our last night at the house, we had an old friend of my wife's and his girlfriend over for drinks. Okay, a lot of drinks. They were Canadian. I put the kids to bed, and we all went out to the back porch to talk and, well, drink. As the night went on, first the girlfriend went to bed, and then my wife went to check on the kids and never came back, which left me and my wife's friend to hang out for a bit. I eventually carried him to his bed, it was a couple of drinks, and then went to check on my wife and kids. They were all sound asleep in a puppy pile on the queen-size bed. I didn't see a spot to really squeeze in, and after a shake or two, I realized my wife was comatose, so I went to our room at the end of the hall. The room we claimed for ourselves was right next to the bathroom, which made it funny to me that we also had a master bath in our bedroom. I laid down to a slightly spinning room and went to sleep. I woke up about 3:30 and heard a creak. Creak. I noticed that the bedroom door was open. I thought I had shut it, but I was also pretty drunk when I came into the room, so the possibility of me not shutting it was definitely there. And the other thing that occurred to me was that someone had woken up and was looking for the bathroom. I had to go to the bathroom, so I got up. I went to the door and opened it, but I didn't see anyone. So I shut it again and turned to walk towards the bathroom. As I walked towards the bathroom, I heard the door creak. I looked over and nothing, although it was slightly more closed. I took 3-ish more steps and creak. I looked, it was open a little more. I got a weird pulse in my head. I get it occasionally, and it seems to be there when something odd is going on. I quickly stepped to the bathroom and went in, turning on the light. When I came back out, the bedroom door was wide open. I went over and looked again, and no one was there. I shut it and went to bed. I was really spooked at this point. I looked at the window, hoping that it was open, that maybe the breeze was moving the door. No. That's when I heard the footsteps down the hall. I called out to my wife, asking if it was her. Nothing. I heard the footsteps again, and they were coming towards the door. The door opened slightly again, and I just froze staring at it. This time, I effing saw it. Then the door shut just a little again, and then it swung wide open and wham! Slammed shut. I went into full 4-year-old mode and literally hid under the covers. I heard the footsteps go back down the hall, and then I was terrifyingly awake the rest of the night, but nothing else happened. About 7 a.m., my wife came into the room and slipped into bed beside me. She felt how on edge I was. "What's wrong?" she asked. I relayed my story. In the morning, I asked everyone if they had gotten up in the middle of the night, and no one had. I asked if anything weird happened to anyone else, and nothing had. I guess it was all just for me. Thanks, Tom.
Good story.
Yes, Tom. I was frightened listening to your story.
Yeah, spooky. Spooky.
You say in your story that you saw it, but are you referring to you saw the door moving, or did you see whatever it was that was making the door move and making footstep noises?
You said you felt a weird thing on your head. Was that the same as in our last story?
Yes, that was that same spiking, yeah. Like horror. I know exactly that pain that he's talking about, too. That's terrible. Oh, and to think that, like, it's happening, like, somewhere that's not your house, like, that's even scarier. I don't know.
Yeah, that's really spooky.
Don't tell Bobby that happened. He already hates going places. If he thinks that there's a possibility that other houses might be haunted, he'll never leave our house again.
Well, thanks, Tom. That was really, really nice. And I want to know where you're a paranormal investigator, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a K2.
Yeah.
Most people don't have a K2 meter.
Okay, next one's one from a good friend of the show.
Oh, is this a Will Fox?
This is
a Will Fox. All right.
Hey, guys. Happy Halloween. So obviously I have a lot of stories, but one of my favorite experiences has to be when we took a trip out to Lake George in New York. Long Island paranormal investigators rented out a few campsites for an extended weekend, and we tent camped there. The campgrounds itself is part of the Lake George battlegrounds from the French and Indian War. Without giving a full-on history lesson, the battlegrounds hosted a battle between the British, reinforced by about 200 Mohawk warriors, and the French on September 8, 1755. The battle resulted in a British victory. So, since there was a war and people died, obviously it's haunted. So fast forwarding through the daytime hours spent smoking cigars and grilling countless pounds of hamburgers, steaks, hot dogs, ribs, etc. over the open fire. Sorry, not sorry, Amelia.
Hey!
We eventually got to investigating the battlegrounds. One spot on the battlegrounds has a pavilion-type area with a stone canopy and picnic tables. The pavilion's perimeter features a 4-foot stone wall that surrounds the picnic tables, except for the front entrance. So there were about 6 or 7 of us investigating that night, and we were all spread out among the pavilion's picnic tables doing an EVP session. For visual's sake, I was sitting in the far right corner of the pavilion as you enter it. My back was to the corner of the pavilion, so there was nothing but the stone wall about 5 feet behind me. While doing the EVP session, another investigator took a flash photo. During the flash, an investigator sitting straight across from me noticed something crouched behind me, "What the?" were the exact words, I believe. As I was about to reply, I felt a strong hand gripped my right shoulder and squeeze. Knowing there was absolutely nothing behind me, I bravely sat there and kept my cool. LOL, JK. I jumped up and hopped forward a good 20 feet. At least that's what it felt like. Of course, when I turned around, there was nothing and nobody there. The first thing we debunked was the flash causing a shatter to project onto the wall behind me, causing the investigator in front of me to see a shadow. This wasn't possible due to the angle the photo was taken. A shadow from the flash would have projected onto the wall to my left, not behind me. And of course could not debunk me feeling a hand grip my shoulder. Needless to say, we were all a bit shocked at this, since not only did I feel a physical touch of something not there, but another investigator also saw it. So yeah, that happened. Oh, and also, I've been touched every time I've sat in that same spot. Spooky, but not frightening anymore. So there's my story. We're still trying to figure out why it seems to keep happening to me, or if that spot has any significance. The pavilion is a modern addition to the park, so that probably means nothing. Any who's ado, love you guys. Can't wait to share more experiences I've had. Will Fox.
Thanks, Will. Good story.
Thanks, Will. We love those stories where creepy things reach out and grab you in the night.
Yeah.
Especially when you're with a bunch of your buddies and you're especially good at trying to debunk all of the things that go wrong. Do I see the name of a famous town on this next one?
Yes. In my mid-20s, I lived in a cute historic apartment in downtown Salem. The apartment had beautiful details, hardwood floors, crown molding, a fireplace, built-in shelving in the kitchen, and even a small elevator in the back hallway, which likely had been the original servants' quarters. It was part of the town known as the McIntyre District because the architect who designed the homes. We had a plaque near the front door indicating that the home had been built in the late 1700s. The front of the home contained the original wrought iron fence, post to tie up your horses, and foot scrapes on the stoop to remove the mud from your boots. When I first moved in, I'd often feel movement at the foot of my bed while I was settling into sleep. At the time, I just assumed it was my imagination. I left a pet cat at my father's house, and I thought I was just feeling phantom movement as a reaction to missing him. Later, I adopted my own cat. She made a favorite spot in the kitchen where she'd sit and stare at the wall for hours on end. My roommate and I would often get in silly little fights because items being moved. Candles would blow out. We'd leave the kitchen and come back into open cabinets. More than once we'd come home and the front door would be open. He'd always said he'd heard the apartment was haunted, but we'd still end up just assuming the other person was causing the mischief and would often bicker about it later. When he moved out, though, the mysterious behavior continued. I no longer had a roommate, but I couldn't deny that I was not alone in this house. My friends and I started calling our friendly ghost Casper. Ghosts are famous for being able to affect technology, and Casper was now loving to play with the lights in the hallway. One time, I had two friends over, and we had just started a movie. The movie suddenly switched to an old black-and-white silent film. We watched it for a while, thinking this is a strange part of the movie. But when it didn't go away, we tried to pause it, change the channel, anything to get our movie restarted. Nothing would work, and the old silent movie kept playing. We had to unplug the entire TV to get it to stop. Eventually, my landlord sold the building, and my rent went up so significantly that I had to move. As I was packing and preparing, the ghostly activity picked up in a major way. The regular behaviors increased in frequency. But there was also an air of distress in it. I suspect the poor Casper didn't want me to move. One night I was sitting alone in my bed watching TV and I felt movement at my feet. I assumed it was my cat and turned to pet her. As I turned, I watched the pillow next to me indent to the shape of a human head. This is where I drew the line. I jumped up and told him to leave. I told him I didn't mind sharing my apartment with him, but he was not welcome in my bedroom and certainly not in my bed. I spent the night awake on the couch anyway. I decided I wanted to try to communicate with the spirit, to see evidence of the spirit. So I would often talk to him and ask him to show himself in photos. I had a whole camera full of photos of orbs and weird flashes of light in my apartment. One time, a water bottle sitting on the table began to rock back and forth, and as soon as I brought the camera up to try to capture it, the camera malfunctioned and shut down. There are photos of what looked like faces in the mist hovering above my couch. There are photos of sunny rays and light beams coming from between my curtains even though they were taken late at night. Unfortunately, I can't find the photos anywhere. My camera has long since broken. I never did discover the identity of my Casper. I looked up the history of the house, and I know the man who owned it had been involved in a murder trial at one point, but it was to testify as a witness. Perhaps he was a disgruntled servant, an old family member who was tied to the home, or any number of things. Looking back now, I think he felt to me to be a young man, and I don't think he wished me harm in any way. Someday, I'd love to go back and see what I can get a feel for it. Jamie Day. Psychic medium Jamie Day, good friend of the show. And you can read more of Jamie's stories on her website, mediumjamieday.com. Good story, Jamie. Thanks.
Thanks, Jamie. You looked really good in your Instagram post earlier today, too.
Yeah, she had this whole, like, deep purple eyeshadow, purple hair, purple necklace.
Looking hot. Hot to try.
All right, so this one is from York, Maine. It's from the old jail. Heading towards some of the first few beaches along the coast of York, Maine, you may see some of the oldest buildings in Maine that are still standing today. Tucked up on top of the hill is the old jail. In 1656, John Parker became the first prison keeper and executioner at the first prison that was located on the jail hill. Prisoners had to work off their court-ordered debt by repairing shoes or processing flax. By 1719, between lack of security and the building needing repairs, the York County Court called for a new prison to be built. It is said that some of the wood from the old 1656 prison was used to help build the new prison. By 1720, the new two-cell stone-walled prison was complete, but by 1729, they added more living space to the prison for the prison keeper and family for them to be able to live on site. Could you imagine? There was little space and thin walls between the prisoners, the keeper, and his family. The concern of the prisoner's health and the well-being is what put a stop on using the two-room cells with only one fireplace and windows that were open year-round. The addition of two cells and more living space for the keeper was built in 1763 as the second floor. In 1799, America was in financial troubles from the Revolutionary War, and because of that, a lot of people were in debt. With overflow of prisoners, Old Jail was added onto once again. York County Court added a larger cell on the second floor and an addition on where the prisoners worked to pay off their debt. In 1806, the storage cellar was built, and the room above is believed to have been an administrative office with a dry attic above. Over time, the Old Jail closed and the York County Prison was moved to Alfred, Maine. I'm really enjoying the history of the Old Jail in Maine. Fun fact, Maine was Massachusetts until March 15th, 1820. Hmm. Did you know that?
I knew Maine was part of Massachusetts, but I didn't know the date.
I would agree with that. That's part of our Massachusetts history we all have to learn in third grade. One of the most famous prisoners that was held at Old Jail was Patience Boston. She was a Native American servant with a colorful history. Patience murdered her master's 8-year-old grandson by throwing him into the well in July 1734.
Oops.
Patience actually gave birth to her third child during her time at Old Jail before she was hung in July 1735. During my visit that I had in June 2019, I asked about where the executions were done. I was told that they would have the prisoners walk about a mile down the road to a place that's now called the Stage Neck Inn. The prisoners' last view would have been the Atlantic Ocean. I was also told there was a rumor that they did some executions right in front of the old jail as well. I guess it depends on who you talk to. I can't recommend enough to take a trip over to the Old York Museum Center. There are 9 locations that make up the museum center. The main 4 and cemetery are all well within a very short walking distance, and you can just pay to visit one building or all. I got mostly all of my information to write this from the amazing staff. I only toured the old jail and York Village old burying ground on my visit, but found out that the Emerson Wilcox house has its own ghost stories as well. I'm hoping to make it back soon and I will share what I found out. But back to the old jail, as I have said in my past 2 blogs that I am on a spiritual journey, I am sensitive and I pick up on things. I want to say that I was drawn to the old jail from one of my favorite podcast hosts from Meet My Ghost.
This she wrote prior to our podcast, so we'll go and assume that we are now her favorite.
Okay. I was going to say, why are we plugging someone else's ghost podcast?
No.
She posted some videos from her visit, and I just knew I needed to go. Walking up to the old jail, I got a pit in my stomach like I was about to give a speech in front of 1,000 people. I got in and still felt like it. Talking to the curator helped me get distracted, but I felt that I was being pulled to the House of Correction room, where the prisoners worked, and the room beyond it, which was possibly the administrative room. Once in the administrative room, I saw a hole in the ceiling which led to the attic, and I could feel the eye looking down on me. I walked through to the kitchen in the stone cells, 1720, and I have to say I honestly didn't feel anything until I felt my butt get touched while I was taking a picture in the first cell. I was trying to debunk what had happened, but I can't explain it. I asked whoever did it to please not touch my butt again and to respect me. I moved on to the living quarters for the prison keeper and his family, and once again I didn't feel much of anything. My mind kept going back to how could someone raise their children in a situation like this. I headed up the narrow stairs and went left into an open room where the prison keeper and family slept next to the prisoner's cells. My breath was taken away, and it was just so heavy up there. It was a complete energy shift. Beyond that room was the debtor's cell, and it felt the same. The hole upstairs just gave me this uneasy feeling. The iron bed in the debtor's cell gave me the creeps, but I kept going back into that room. I finally headed back down the stairs and had to ask about the activity in the building. The curator told me that many people have felt things, but she had never experienced anything herself. She claims that she wasn't open to it, but she recommended that I go talk to another curator. I had to work up the courage to do that because it was outside my comfort level, but I did it for all the wonderful people that are reading this. The curator asked me what I felt, and I told her everything. She looked right at me and said, "You're right." She thought the butt touching was funny and said that she has never been touched but feels like people have been right up behind her many times. She told me how upstairs is very heavy and that there have been times when she was the only person in the building and she could hear walking back and forth in the debtor room. Then came the shocker for me that she thought that the iron bed that came from the Civil War brought out more of the activity. The old jail in York, Maine, and the surrounding buildings are so rich in early New England history, and I'm pretty sure there is a good amount of mysteries, too, that we will never know. If only the walls could talk. From Missy Lathrop, and you can read more of her stories on hauntedemporium.com.
Thank you so much, Missy. That was awesome.
Thank you.
That was really good. It's a good story. And I would also like to plug hauntedemporium.com again for Missy, because I've actually used that for some of my stories before to get like history and background of places. She does a really phenomenal job.
Awesome. Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah, no, she really does. Oh, it's so funny. We're reading this right now and Mike from Arizona literally 1 minute ago sent me a message. I tried to make time to write and I failed. So thanks, Mike from Arizona. We appreciate the effort. So we also had our friends from the Bhatnagar Paranormal Society send us a video. Unfortunately, the accents are really thick, and a lot of it is in, I'm assuming the language is Hindi. I'm not totally sure. So unfortunately, we won't be able to play it. It's a very, very interesting video, though, of a ghost hunt they did, and there's a lot of interesting stuff inside of it. We have watched it. So you can actually go and like and subscribe to their YouTube channel. And that is the Bhatnagar, Bhatnagar Paranormal Society on YouTube. And this video is a haunted apartment, Raghahart, Newtown. And it's interesting. It's really cool. But again, unfortunately, because we can't play the video, we can only do the audio, it wouldn't be to the benefit of you folks. So thank you to our friends in India. We so appreciate it. Everyone, please go like and subscribe to their YouTube channel.
Have a look at this.
Okay, and we know what that sound clip means. Time for an awesome, special, spooky Halloween version story from our friend Daniel down in Australia, mate.
G'day, it's Dan from Australia. Speaking of me, favourite cheerleaders from New England. Sitting there on my esky, put me a cobra on, throwing a couple of more shrimps on the barbie. Okay, I'll stop talking like that. Contrary to popular belief, we don't all talk like that in Australia, at least not here in the cities. So, you'll just have to put up with my good-for-mime, typical, everyday voice. I'm just going to tell you about a short personal story from my late teen years. a good friend and I decided we had to take a shortcut through Hobart's biggest and oldest cemetery called Carnelian Bay. It's got graves all the way back from the early 1800s right up to modern ones. Everything from modern new marble monstrosities to sunken old sandstone headstoned graves that look like they haven't been attended for 100 years. Now, my friend and I, typical teenage boys, always thought it's great fun to take a shortcut through this cemetery. We could take a shorter route by actually going around it on the nicely sealed road, but no, we felt we always needed to go along the gravel path through the cemetery. This one time, we decided to do it at night time. On an overcast night, it was quite dark in the cemetery, even though it's not far from the city. And we're just walking up the rise through the fence, up between the headstones, very slowly, watching out for the security guys, because it's illegal to actually be in there at night time. Shh, don't tell anyone. We're walking up between the old headstones in an older section along the gravel path, and it's just silent. We're just walking along, and all of a sudden ahead of us, probably 100 feet in front, there's a sudden white flash from the left to the right on the path ahead of us. We paused. We're watching. Nothing happens. It's just hidden behind a headstone. We're going, come on, we don't believe in ghosts. Surely that can't be a ghost. There's got to be a logical explanation. But it looks so much like a ghost. It was glowing. It was white and it was see-through to a certain degree. So after our hearts settled down for a moment, we walked a bit further up. We're getting closer and closer and walking to the headstone that it seemed to disappear behind. We're heading up much, much closer, very slowly. Nothing happens. We get right up to where it disappeared behind the headstone, started to look around the headstone, and all of a sudden, this big white feral cat flies out from behind the headstone, runs back off across the path the other way. After we landed back down on our feet, we checked our hearts to make sure we still had a pulse. We checked the back of our pants to make sure we hadn't soiled ourselves in fear. It turns out this gigantic feral white cat, long fur, would hang around this cemetery at night time. Apparently there's a few stories of people being scared by it. When there's a bit of light behind it, it actually looks like a translucent ghost. It certainly scares you. So there's my very quick, very short story of a ghost that wasn't, but it had the same effect as a real one. So there you have it, ladies. My first attempt at recording my own story. Apparently it's a little harder than I expected to just talk to yourself in a microphone. Oh, I don't know how you two do it for an hour at a time on your podcast. But anyway, that's my first attempt. I'll leave it there and I'll put a bit more effort into a longer one, hopefully before next week's podcast.
Good story, Daniel.
The ghost story that wasn't.
I like that a lot. That was a good one. Twists and turns. And you did a great job talking to yourself alone. It is very hard.
Yes. It's even hard a lot of times when there's another person directly across from you.
It's very, very true. It can be tricky. And that is why we actually usually record for 2 hours, but you only hear an hour of it.
Yes. Sometimes you just have to lean back and stretch a little bit. And I have a really squeaky chair.
But thank you so much for sending that. That was awesome and great. And I'm so happy. He sent that to us in just the nick of time.
Yes.
Nick of time.
And so it's funny that, Daniel, you had started off when we started this whole conversation back over the summer in saying that nobody would be able to understand you.
I thought he was quite coherent.
I understood everything that he said.
I feel I'm at a little of an advantage because I have set my iPhone up. Like, it talks to me with an Australian accent.
That's weird.
Yeah, so I get all of my directions and everything as an Australian woman.
Fran has, like, a British guy that talks to her.
Yeah.
I just have the regular Siri lady.
Nah. I like to spice it up.
Well, that's why they give Siri lots of voices.
There we go.
For people who like different voices. So anyway, Daniel, thank you so much.
Okay, well, thank you guys so much for all your stories. Those are awesome. We really appreciate it.
And just in time for Halloween.
And we learned a lot. I thought that was great.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Thanks.
I really like the blog post that Missy and Jamie sent.
Yeah.
And if you guys like them as much as we did, by all means, go over and check out their blogs, their websites. I think that Jamie has a YouTube channel.
I'm not sure. I just watch her all the time on Instagram.
Okay.
She did a thing the other day where you could, like, send her someone's initials and she'd do, like, a one-card pull.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I sent her some initials.
Okay. And what was the outcome?
I got some good advice from Spirit that I already knew.
Okay. Isn't it nice when you're getting the same information over and over?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. In addition to lots of stories, we also got a ton of fan mail this week. So thank you so much.
I know. Usually on a good week, we might get like two messages, like one through Instagram and one email.
Like a good week is two.
Yeah.
And this week we got
a couple of pages worth.
Yeah, we're up to eight. So thank you guys so much. It's really humbling and wonderful, and we really appreciate it. We put so much work into this podcast, so it's awesome. Thank you for appreciating it. Okay, so the first message we have here. Hi, I've just read the article on the haunting of Oliver House, which I myself have visited about 3 years ago, and I'm writing because I brought my friend's 9-year-old daughter there, who was so excited about the history of the house. So we went in, not joining a tour, but wandering through on our own. I had no idea the actual happenings in the history of the house, except that it was built by Dr. Peter Oliver, until I read the article in the Middleborough Gazette today. What happened the day I visited was when we entered the room to the right of coming through the front door, there was a tremendous energy, which is a gift I never asked for and have always creeped me out. I literally got the feeling to leave, and my niece, friend's daughter, was in her glory being there. And I started to feel intense heat. No one else appeared to feel it, and it was not a hot flash. It came on like I was boiling inside and out. Bad enough, I grabbed Reagan and said, "Ray, we gotta go out now. I'm sick," to which she said, "Okay." Sweat poured from me, and I was so hot I nearly threw up. I felt the house just wanted me to go. I'm writing because I did not know a 2-year-old was scolded to death till today. I'm curious if you know what room the death occurred. Like I said, I have a gift for picking up intense energy since childhood. Apparitions were seen by me right through my teen years. Now I can only see shadow people occasionally. Boy, the stories I could tell, which were sometimes backed up by witnesses. I just want to know which room this poor baby died in. I felt her pain and just found out it was hers. I'm a strong empath. I'm 51 years old. By the way, as soon as I reached the door, which was a fairly warm day, the relief I felt was incredible. I would love to join you if you're ever in the area again to visit Oliver House. Even though it scares me, I would like to try to send some positive energy to the child. I'm in no way a crazy person. I am completely normal. Well, except for my strange gifts. Thank you, Melissa. Well, thank you so much for writing in, Melissa.
We don't think that any of the people that write into the show are crazy.
No. No.
Everybody has their own experience, and a lot of people just need an outlet to share it.
Yeah, and we believe all of it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, keep it coming. That was great. I don't know off the top of my head which room that was in, but if you reach out to Chris and Christy, who volunteer over there at the Oliver House, I'm sure they'd be so happy to tell you. Thank you for reaching out. There was an article in the Middleborough Gazette that I was interviewed for. They interviewed me for 25 minutes. And they put in two lines, but I'm glad that you found out about our podcast through those two lines. Yeah, and thank you so much for sharing your story with us. We really appreciate it.
So this email is a follow-up to our really great story that we had
last week. Big Boot.
And the Scary Nun. Hello, my name is Stephanie, and my 11-year-old son, Gabe, sent you an email. Tonight we all had a good laugh. Gabe was in the shower listening to your podcast when he realized you were reading his letter. He freaked out. He jumped out of the shower, pulled the towel rod completely out of the wall, and screamed with excitement. His sister, his dad, and I ran to see what was going on. We all celebrated with him once we realized. I told him this was likely to be the best day of his childhood. No place to go but down. Anyway, keep up the good work, and thanks for making my son's day. P.S. I can attest that my son had terrible night terrors. When we were living in that house, he was 3 to 7 years old, which was built before the Civil War. There were indeed a set of footprints at the foot of his bed and in a doorway that would come and go, and he would cry in the night about Big Boot. I knew nothing about the nun until I read the email he had written you. He said he didn't realize it was a nun until he saw a picture of Mother Teresa years later.
Ooh, thanks, Gabe. We really appreciate that.
Yes, thanks, Gabe. And thanks, Stephanie, for the follow-up.
Yes, and Stephanie, you are right, because getting on this show is the pinnacle. That, I mean, there is nowhere to go but down. You've made it. You made it on Ghost Hunting in New England. I mean, what's what's a bigger deal than that, you know?
Getting free donuts.
I mean, maybe, but he's... Is Gabe 11, so Stephanie, he's always getting free donuts.
Is Gabe getting free donuts? Because that, I would think that that is a worthy lifelong ambition.
Yeah, I would say, because I know Gabe is listening right now, Gabe, go tell your mom we say it's okay to buy you a donut.
Yeah.
Yeah. And thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And sorry about the shower rod.
Oh. that... we've all had that happen. You get so excited and you just yank the shower curtain down. Like, it's okay. Like,
it's all right.
Yeah, you just find somebody tall and they put it back up for you.
Okay, here comes our next letter. I was just listening to the episode where you two were interviewing the Wiccan medium from Salem.
Tim Regan.
Sup, Tim. The interview was great and he was very cool. But when you mentioned your numerology thing and that 1222 keeps popping up, I had to write. My birthday is 1222. It's also, as I'm sure you know, the shortest day of the year. Well, it shares it with 1221. And also the winter solstice. Anyway, kind of gave me a jolt. Happy hauntings. Tom.
Glad you could connect, Tom.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I do know that because my mom's birthday is the 21st. And Beth and my grandfather always used to joke, born on the darkest day of the year.
But she's the sunniest, brightest, most amazing, happy person.
That's what I always tell her. She came to Earth to bring the light back. So thank you. Yeah, I still see 1222 everywhere. I still see 122 everywhere. It drives me absolutely insane. I had a very cool conversation earlier this week with Donna on Instagram, who... let me know that she sees, oh gosh, my brain is not working. I think she sees 34s and 37s everywhere. We got to figure out what it is. If anyone out there, hello, 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 you out there. If you know a numerologist, get in touch because I'll do something with that in a heartbeat. I would love, love, love to talk to a really good numerologist. So yeah, thanks for writing in, Tom. And I'll remember your birthday.
Just wanted to say I love your show. I'm local too and was looking for a good ghost hunting podcast and happened upon yours and I'm really glad I did. You both do such a great job setting a vivid scene while peppering in great banter and reactions to one another. Christ Davis, 034.
Thank you so much, Christ Davis. That was a really encouraging message to get.
Thank you.
Oh, this one I put in for a reason. This, we already heard from this person once tonight, but I wanted to put this in so I could add a little caveat.
Okay.
Hey, Amelia and Beth. I loved the episode about near-death experiences. I sent you an email about my near-death experience about a month ago. I hope you read it and liked it. I love the podcast and recommend it to everyone. Nathan. Hey, so, well, first of all, thank you, Nathan. That was really great. That was awesome. And your story was awesome. And near-death experiences are awesome.
And thanks for telling all your friends.
And thank you for telling all your friends. And thank you for enjoying that episode. Because I, as I said on the episode, really love near-death experiences. I wanted to read that to everyone because guess what? We never got that first email he sent us.
No, it didn't come through.
We didn't get it at all. And this is a reminder to everyone. If you send us something and you don't hear back from me, we didn't get it. Because I'm pretty good about keeping up and sending people notes back or little things back. So especially if you don't hear it, if you hear other people's stories being read and yours hasn't been read and you haven't gotten an email back, we didn't get it. Please resend it. Send us a note on social media because we want them.
Right.
And we don't want it like this. If we're not going to read it, we're going to tell you we're not going to read it. And we haven't done that for anyone. So just always keep that in mind. We're not like skipping your story ever, ever on purpose. So I wanted to read that to say that.
Hello, ladies. I'm a new listener and I love the show. I'm getting through about an episode per day during my commute. Amelia, you mentioned you were really into coffee. What's your current favorite? I'm a coffee person also, and love to hear what others are drinking and loving. Can't wait until tomorrow morning so I can listen more. Rock and roll, aw yeah.
Hey, thank you. So I had sent him some coffee recommendations and he's tried some. He sent me some of his feedback today. And just so everyone knows, my favorite coffee comes from the Crateberry Cafe and you can buy it online at crateberry.com.
Shameless plug.
Shameless.
Shameless.
Shameless. We send it all over the United States. Okay. Okay. So our next one was sent to us and I'm not going to read who it was from because I didn't get their blessing to read who it was from. But it is an interesting story, so I want to read it. I had a strange occurrence in my apartment yesterday that I cannot explain. I was unfortunately half blind, as I was without contacts and glasses when it happened. But I could see enough to have witnessed what looked like a white puff of smoke materialize and go up into my ceiling yesterday. And I swear it was no way something intentionally happening with my vision. I haven't told anyone about it yet because I don't think they'd believe me. But I also see little white feathers floating around my apartment all the time too, which everyone else has denied ever seeing, and saying it is just from my pillow. But I literally see them all the time. Spooky. P.S. Another little feather appeared just after I put my phone down. I like that a lot. Because that is a sign angels are around when you see feathers. That's a common one. Some people say they see feathers. Some people say they see coins. I see coins. So at my work and at my apartment, I have jars and they're labeled pennies from heaven and no one's allowed to touch it. And it's all like the change I find that I think are like my angels coming to me and giving me little pennies.
Hmm.
Yeah. So feathers is a really big one.
So wait a second. So you pick up these pennies and you then keep them in a jar?
Yep.
Don't you think that's being a little selfish, trapping all the angel energy?
No, I think they're for me.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a reminder someone close to me who passed away is keeping an eye out.
Okay. Well, yeah. I don't know. I would think that pass them on. Let the angels go elsewhere and do more work for others.
No, I think it's a specific person trying to let me know they're around.
Okay.
Yeah. So, thank you for that. If anyone else has weird things happen, what else makes you feel like your angels are around? For me, I see 444 everywhere. And I look at that as a guardian angel that my spirit guides are telling me I'm on the right path. So, if anyone has any others, please write into the show. And that is it for our mail. We didn't get any reviews this week.
People were too busy writing us mail.
They were. Oh, well, I was driving here and someone sent me a Facebook message that said, by the way, I love your show. So thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening. I was surprised you listened, but I'm really happy you are. So this episode comes out on the 30th and November 1st, All Saints Day, also marks 6 months of us doing this podcast.
Mm-hmm. It was published 6 months ago.
Which is very exciting, and I have had a tremendous time doing it, and have loved it to death. And unfortunately, Beth has some news.
Oh, I figured they would just hear it on the November 1st one. So Beth is going on hiatus from the podcast. I'm looking at doing some other things with a lot of my time.
And we will miss her. And there's, you know, it's so sad. I'm going to miss Beth tremendously. And now I need more people to ghost hunt with, too. That way the show can stay funny. It's not as funny when I'm alone. But yeah, Beth, this has been great. And thank you for these 6 months. It's been awesome and a ton of fun. So yeah.
Yeah. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm gonna miss you. It's gonna be sad. Daniel and Gabe will miss you too.
They will. Yeah. And I'll miss all the mail and all the Instagram people and
yeah. So yeah, that's really sad. If anyone else knows of cool groups in the area who wanna get together and go ghost hunting with me, I would love to do that. You wanna get together and go ghost hunting, let me know. I still think we should all get together at the Peter Oliver house. And yeah, so that's kind of what we got. You want to do contact info one last time?
Oh, of course. All right. You can reach Ghost Hunting in New England on their Instagram, Ghost Hunting in New England. You can reach them on Facebook, facebook.com/ghosthuntinginnewengland. You can reach them on Twitter, Ghost Hunting NE. You can also follow Amelia on Twitter because she's really curious how does Twitter work and she wants more followers.
Yeah.
What's your Twitter?
I don't know. I think it's AR_Childs.
Okay. And if you go into the ghost hunting page, you'll be able to go through and see where she's saying stuff, and you'll be able to follow her there. You can find Ghost Hunting in New England on their webpage, www.ghosthuntinginnewengland.com. You can send a carrier pigeon to the Somerville Media Center, or if you're a techie because it's 2019, you can email them, ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com. Amelia is very responsive to emails, so if you email and you don't get a response, she didn't see it. She's not ignoring you.
No, she's not. And, oh, I meant to say it earlier, and I'm so sorry. A few people, we had put something out on social media about guest hosts for the month of November, and a lot of people reached out, I think 4 or 5 of you, about November 29th, and everyone kind of said the same thing, which is like, well, if you need someone for November 29th, we're here. And I really appreciate that. Thank you all so much. Unfortunately, it turns out the studio is taking an extended holiday vacation, so they actually won't even be open that entire week. So I don't need anyone, but I appreciate it and look forward to connecting with you guys more in the future for those dates. And as always, thank you to Aaron Schilb, who does our music.
It almost seems unfair that I was finally able to say his name correctly last week. And now this is, yeah, it took me 6 months to figure out how to say his name.
Yeah. But thanks, Aaron.
Yeah. And you wrote great music.
He still does. And you guys can go find Aaron on Instagram at TheAaronSchilb. And to give him a quick plug also, he runs the Nashville Tour Stop. They're currently selling t-shirts. So if you connect with Aaron online, you can help support him and his business by purchasing a t-shirt. I have mine coming. It's en route to me right now. It is $20 plus $5 shipping and handling, which is very reasonable for a very cool t-shirt to support a cool local business.
Does Ghost Hunting in New England have any merch or any swag yet?
Nope.
Will that be coming in the future?
Might be.
Okay. So people can look forward to that.
Eventually.
All right, folks. It's been fun. I hope you all have a wonderful Halloween. Stay safe. Stay away from any tainted candy. Don't drink too much. Most of you have to go to work tomorrow.
Happy hunting.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.